top stories. Palestinians hailed the UN top rights body's decision to launch a probe into crimes committed during the recent Israeli onslaught on Gaza. Russia says the U.S. decision not to rejoin the Open Skies Arms Control Treaty is another political mistake that inflicts a new blow on the European security system. Also ahead, official data shows France, the Eurozone's second largest economy, fell into recession in the first quarter of 2021 amid the coronavirus pandemic. Palestinian Authority has welcomed the decision by the UN Human Rights Council to investigate crimes committed during the recent Israeli onslaught against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. The PA said the decision amounts to international recognition of Israel's systematic oppression and discrimination against the Palestinian people. It added that this reality of apartheid and impunity can no longer be ignored. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has also hailed the UNHCR's decision for investigation. This is on the news line. Israeli actions against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip will come under the microscope. The UN has launched an investigation into Israel's devastating onslaught against Gaza.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are still reeling from the most recent Israeli onslaught against the coastal territory. Such scenes of destruction are seen throughout Gaza, with many families camping near their flattened homes. It could take many months before these ruined buildings are rebuilt. Israel's devastating onslaught left scores of Palestinians, including dozens of children, dead. The war was another stark reminder of how brutal the regime can be in dealing with the people it has subjugated for many decades. The Israelis argued during the operation that they were trying to wipe out resistance groups and their capabilities. But that's implausible because the sheer number of civilian casualties and horrific scenes of destruction of residential buildings leave no doubt that the regime committed numerous crimes and violations during its latest war. On Thursday, the United Nations Human Rights Council voted to launch an international investigation into the war. The draft resolution was presented by Pakistan on behalf of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation and the Palestinian delegation to the United Nations. Pakistan's ambassador to the OIC, Khalil Hashmi, who was speaking on behalf of the organization, sharply criticized Israel's supporters. He blasted Israel's allies for shielding the occupier from global accountability and providing arms and ammunition for its widely reported war crimes and crimes of apartheid against the Palestinian people.
Before the resolution was adopted on Thursday, UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet told the Rights Council that deadly Israeli strikes on Gaza might constitute war crimes. She said Israel's strikes in Gaza caused widespread destruction of civilian infrastructure and fatalities. Her comments seem to have angered the Israelis.
United Nations Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet had tough words for Israel. She rejected Israeli claims that the destroyed buildings in Gaza were hosting members of the Palestinian resistance groups or used for military purposes. Meanwhile, the UN rights chief also criticized Hamas for firing rockets at Israeli cities, saying it constituted, quote, a clear violation of international humanitarian law. Thursday's announcement of an international investigation into alleged crimes committed during the 11-day war seems to have enraged the Israelis. The regime was quick to reject the decision, saying it would not cooperate with the probe. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, on the other hand, welcomed the investigation. The United States, which has observer status and no vote at the Geneva Forum, refrained from speaking at the special session. The investigators will have a broad mandate to look into all alleged violations. The probe will cover not just the Gaza Strip, but also the occupied West Bank and the Israeli cities, which came under retaliatory rocket attacks by Palestinian resistance groups. Future findings of the independent investigation are expected to once again mount pressure on the Israeli regime. But will its allies allow any meaningful action against it? The U.S. in particular has been extremely supportive of Tel Aviv. Observers believe this unwavering support leaves no room for the U.S. to want to be a mediator between the Israelis and the Palestinians.
For people in Palestine, for many, many countries in the world, the notion of the United States being a mediator is simply a derisory. It's a joke, and nobody believes it. But for internal domestic consumption, that's important. It also is a fig leaf for Europeans, particularly the British, but others, to say, well, the United States is in charge and we don't have to do anything. But I think increasingly, and we see that, increasingly the United States is no longer considered to be a mediator. The Palestinians, for sure, cannot continue to do this. Abbas cannot continue to agree to these things, and that's obvious.
Sarbaz Ruhollah Rezvi is a political commentator. He believes the UN rights body's decision to probe Israel crimes against the Gaza Strip is another victory for Palestinians, following Israel's military defeat in its latest onslaught on the besieged territory.
The decision that was taken by the Human Rights Commission of the United Nations has something really important in it. It is going to make and form a council which is a permanent council. So this is exactly the different point of this decision of Human Rights Commission, Human Rights, United Nations Human Rights Commission, that this commission is going to have a non-ended mandate to make probes on the possible war crimes being committed in the occupied lands of Palestine. So this is something new. I believe that this achievement is, again, another victory for the Palestinians against the Zionist regime. So we had the defeat, we had the military defeat that took place throughout 11 days of the war, because the Zionists were not able to achieve their goals, and they were shocked by the reaction of the Palestinians, their resistance in Gaza, specifically speaking. The second point, which was a defeat for the Zionist regime, was the public opinion and the reaction of the people across the globe on social media, on the streets, from United States of America to UK, to all the Muslim and Arab countries. We observed a huge reaction, not only from the Muslims, but also from Christian, Jews, seculars, from liberals from across the globe. So this was the second field, I believe, that was a victory. That was a victory for the Palestinian front.
Senior Iranian diplomat has condemned the recent Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip, saying the regime's backers must be held accountable for deaths and destruction in the besieged territory. Iran's ambassador to Geneva-based international organizations, Esmail Baghaei Hamaneh, made the remarks during a special meeting of the UN Human Rights Council. Hamaneh said seeking justice for crimes committed against Palestinians must become the international community's immediate demand. He stressed that the only stable solution to the conflict is to hold a referendum with the participation of all Palestinian people. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has won a new seven-year term in office as president of the Syrian Arab Republic. Our correspondent in Damascus, Mohammed Ali, has the details.
The count of votes for Syria's presidential elections ended on Thursday after millions of Syrians cast their ballots on the 26th of May to choose one of the three presidential candidates as the nation's next leader. Speaker of Syria's People's Assembly, Hamoudeh Sabbagh, announced the final result in a press conference.
I am delighted and honored to announce the victory of Bashar Hafez al-Assad as the president of the Syrian Arab Republic. I express in the name of the Syrian People's Assembly our pride and appreciation and congratulations to our great Syrian people who voted for a free and great leader.
More than 13 million Syrians out of 14 million voted in favor of Assad. People filled the streets and main squares of major cities, celebrating what they say is a victory against all states that opposed the elections. Chanting slogans in support of President Bashar al-Assad, Syrians danced, sang, and expressed in all ways possible their feelings for their leader.
Western enemy countries' economic sanctions caused food and basic supply shortages in Syria, which forced Syrians to line up for hours at shop doors. Those countries today are definitely surprised to see those lines of people on the streets now expressing their love to President Assad and Syria. We will continue supporting Assad even if bread, water, food and gas are not available.
We are gathering today in all squares to tell all countries of the world that no country will defeat us, no matter how much plots they hatch. We are with Assad and we are steadfast. We all love President Assad.
Currently, Syrians' main demand is for President Assad to improve the economic situation in the country, which is suffering under harsh economic sanctions imposed unilaterally by the West and the United States.
It's a historic moment in Syria, and Syrians have made that clear on the streets. They are celebrating victory over all states that wanted to forcibly topple the country's president for years, that they are the owners of this land and have the right to determine their country's future. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Russia says it is disappointed by the U.S. decision not to rejoin the Open Skies Arms Control Treaty. Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov says the U.S. has made another political mistake, inflicting a new blow to the European security system. He added, however, that the U.S. decision does not create an atmosphere conducive to arms control discussions during an upcoming summit between the leaders of the two countries. Ryabkov was referring to next month's meeting between Russian President Vladimir Putin and his U.S. counterpart Joe Biden in Geneva. The U.S. State Department has cited Russia's failure to comply with the accord as reasons for not joining it, an allegation Moscow denies. Former U.S. President Donald Trump pulled his country out of the Open Skies Treaty that came into force in 2002. Let's try and understand this matter a little bit better. I'm going to bring in Mr. Dmitry Babich. He's a political analyst who joins us via Skype out of Moscow. Mr. Babich, welcome to the program. Please share with us your understanding of this. Why is it that this Open Skies Treaty is important, and why the disappointment by the Russians?
Well, Russia is in favor of any arms control agreements because we have absolutely no desire to attack other countries. We want to be transparent if our so-called partners in the West are also transparent. So the idea of the Open Skies Agreement, which was signed, in the early 90s, after many years of foot dragging by the United States, the idea is that not only Russia and the United States, but also European countries have the right to inspect each other's territory once in a certain period of time, I guess once in a few months, to see if there are any dangerous troop concentrations on the ground, especially near the borders. So the reason why Mr. Trump decided to destroy this agreement is because the United States is an aggressive country ready to attack others. And second, the United States has satellites which allow Americans to watch other countries' troop movements without having any reconnaissance flights over their territory. So Russia also has such satellites, and we were very sad, but when Trump decided to dump that agreement, that was his decision, we agreed. But then the Europeans said that maybe they will have the right to inspect our skies. And we said no, because we know that Europeans would share their information with the United States, because Europeans do not behave independently. It's enough to see, look at their politics in the last 30 years at least. And the irony of the situation is that President Biden, just a few months ago, when he was not yet the president, criticized Trump for killing that Open Skies Agreement. Trump basically was criticized by Biden as a belligerent, stupid old man to ditch that agreement. Mm-hmm. Now, suddenly, Mr. Biden is as hawkish as Mr. Trump, He also made it clear that he wants to ditch this agreement, even though Russia suggested returning to status quo and behaving as if Mr. Trump never made his statements. So Biden basically turned our offer down, and now it means that there will be no reconnaissance flights over the territory of Russia and its Western so-called partners.
Many, many thanks, Dmitry Babich, political analyst out of Moscow, with those comments. I really appreciate it. Have a good day there. Well, two European airlines have accused Russia of blocking flights that avoided Belarus airspace amid a standoff between Minsk and Brussels over the arrest of a Belarusian opposition figure. Austrian Airlines and Air France say they canceled their Moscow-bound flights after Russian authorities did not approve their planes to change routes to avoid the Belarusian airspace. They say Russia refused permission for the flights to land in Moscow. On Monday, the EU imposed sanctions and bans on Belarus after Minsk forced a Lithuania-bound airliner to land and arrested a dissident on board. Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko denies any wrongdoing. He says Belarus acted in accordance with international norms when an aircraft was forced to land over a suspected bomb threat. France, the Eurozone's second largest economy, has fallen into recession in the first quarter of 2021. Well, that is according to a revised official data. The NC Statistics Agency says France's GDP contracted by 0.1% in the first 3 months of the year. The agency had previously estimated 0.4% growth. The country had already experienced 1.5% contraction in the last quarter of 2020. The revision is highly unusual in France and underscores challenges the government has faced in responding to the coronavirus pandemic, which has taken a heavy toll on the global economy. And that's it with international news.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
People who limit the Quran to worshipping and personal matters haven't understood it. This is a part of a speech delivered on April 14, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, at the annual Ramadan Quranic meeting. The speech was delivered via video conference with the participation of a number of prominent Quranic reciters.
Jihadi forces should rush to the help of the health personnel. The people should cooperate as well. In the beginning of the previous year, some people voluntarily went to hospitals to help nurses and other medical personnel. And they also helped outside hospitals. This year too, if some people have the capability to do it, they should do it voluntarily. The movement of pious help and almsgiving should continue and reach its peak in the present time. The next point in this regard is the issue of the popular assistance movement. Well, the month of Ramadan is the month of good deeds. It has always been the case. Even in normal times, in the month of Ramadan, generous people and believers offer their banquet and their generosity to the needy. However, when a pandemic is there, this issue becomes increasingly important. It is really necessary for the movement of offering pious help to reach its peak among the people in the month of Ramadan. Of course, I know that some people have already begun this without waiting for my advice. They are now busy helping in different corners of the country. They are either preparing themselves to do this or they have already started it. I know this, but I want to mention that you should continue this movement until it spreads among everyone. Subhanallah, hamdan lillah, wa la ilaha illallah. Subhanallah, hamdan lillah, wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu Akbar. Everyone should help so that the movement of pious help will reach its peak. This was what I wanted to say about the coronavirus and the disease, and these were my recommendations. I wish to say something about the current issue of the country, the Barjam, JCPOA, the sanctions and other such matters. Well, there are many discussions in this regard. We have announced the country's policy and we have pointed it out to officials, doing so up close and in writing. We have discussed it with them in public and private meetings. It is clear what the country's policy is and what they should do. Now the officials have decided to negotiate in order to implement the same policy. I have no problem with this, but they should take care not to let negotiations become too lengthy and tiresome, not to allow the other sides to prolong the negotiations too much, because this is detrimental to the country. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Ministry.
Finally, the sound of warplanes, cannons, and missiles became silent in Palestine, giving room to the sound of politics. This does not mean that the battle is over, but rather that a new chapter of it may begin, but with different tools and methods. a chapter in which the resistance is fully prepared to deal with, whether through negotiations or in the battlefield, where it showed high readiness to repel any new Israeli aggression. In the meantime, behind Israeli closed doors, the situation is confused. Many questions were brought forward to the Israeli decision-makers' table about their failure, its causes, how to limit that failure and handle its repercussions, whether on the Palestinian front line or in more distant ones. Anyhow, Israel realizes that what comes after the sword of Al-Quds will not be the same as before it. Just as the resistance factions realize this, headed by Hamas, which began working on restoring its relations with Syria as part of the expected and feasible investment in the results of the last confrontation with Israel. As for the West Bank and the 1948 occupied territories, the Palestinian natives there will not be forced back into the Israeli occupation's tight grip, as the revolt sparked during the last week of Ramadan will not end soon. The results of the unparalleled confrontations inside occupied Palestine will not be easy to erase. Rather, it will dig deep, whether in terms of the unity amongst the Palestinian people or the confrontation with the occupation or even clashing with the Oslo Authority. Is this but one more cycle of Israeli violence exhibiting the unresolvable war between a native people overwhelmed by a colonial intruder emboldened by a unique religiously grounded settler sense of entitlement? Or are we witnessing the beginning of the end of the century-long struggle by the Palestinian people to defend their homeland against the unfolding Zionist project that stole their land, trampled on their dignity, and made Palestinians victimized strangers in what had been their national home for centuries? The answer is quite simple. What the latest round of Israel's incremental genocide have made clear is that Palestinians all across historic Palestine are withstanding prolonged oppression with their spirit of resistance intact and refuse pacification regardless of the severity of the imposed hardships. Yes, Palestine can and will be free. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. Underlying the eruption of tensions between oppressor and oppressed all across Palestine, the lights have remained scandalously dim at the UN. Western leaders pathetically call for calm on both sides as if they are equal, while apparently affirming the one-sidedness of Israel's right to defend itself as if it had been attacked out of the blue. What the recent Israeli genocidal approach has made clear is that the Palestinians are withstanding prolonged oppression with their spirit of resistance intact and refuse pacification regardless of the severity of the imposed hardships. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Muna Issa, spokesperson of the Boycott U.S. Products campaign and political commentator. Thank you very much, Muna, for being with us.
Pleasure to be here.
Now, as a spokesperson of the BUP, Muna, how relevant is your work to the confrontations that shook the entire world for the past 2 weeks?
It's very important to point out that Israel is a proxy for the United States in the Middle East. As Joe Biden once said, if there wasn't an Israel in the Middle East, they'd have to create one. And so if we are taking a firm stance against Israeli war crimes in the region, is it logical to fund it? Mm-hmm. So here we talk about putting our money where our mouth is. So we encourage the boycott of United States products that support Israel as well as Israeli products. And such products are very prominent in today's international economy. We're talking about Starbucks, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Victoria's Secret, Estee Lauder. So these are just some of the most prominent products that are active supporters of Israeli apartheid war crimes. The United States every single year grants Israel $4 billion unconditionally, and these are made to support Israel militarily, diplomatically, and financially. This is other than the loans and the private companies that are actively supporting destroying Palestinian homes and building settlements and enforcing apartheid. So in order to take a stance against Israeli war crimes, it is very, very essential that we boycott products that support it.
Thank you for that. Muna, now, after 11 days of constant Israeli air raids against residential areas in Gaza, along with the clashes inside of the occupied Palestinian territories, which is a historic unilateral Israeli ceasefire, was announced at the end of last week. Now, both Zionists and pro-Palestinians are repeating the same thing, that if the ceasefire between the Palestinian resistance and the Israeli army holds in this format that it is right now, then it will be a major blow to the actual existence of Israel. How do you think that is the case here?
It's the case here that for Israel to be pressured to have a ceasefire, it essentially means that it has met its match. So the fact that Israel, for the first time, it has actually worked in defending itself, this is a blow to the ego, other than other things. Here we could count at least three failures of the Israeli army and the governance. First of all, according to the Israeli population, the civilian population, despite all the military support and equipment, and despite all the international diplomatic support, Israelis were not able to protect their infrastructure and Israeli civilians from the Palestinian resistance rocket. And this is a blow to their security, because the very existence of Israel, the very basic tenet, is based on security. And once that is gone, well, almost all Israeli citizens have dual citizenships. They're going to pack their bags and go, because they've been promised the land of milk and honey. Mm-hmm. And so without that, Israel would be no more. So it was integrative that they enforced the ceasefire.
But the crucial point of what happened during May 2021 in occupied Palestine is that all the regnant delusions that have driven the Israeli mentality and thinking for the past several decades were exposed. They're exposed that they are actually self-destructive. The political norms that they're using, despite the disaster that they have brought about, are still being exposed more than ever. How do you perceive the upcoming days and weeks in the internal Israeli-occupied cities, which have received probably the harshest blows by the resistance?
The Israelis have been very busy over the past few years in supporting Takfiri fighters in Syria, in engaging in peace deals with the GCC countries, and working on having their existence shoulder to shoulder with Arabs and in a normalization processes. This is in addition to their simulation and their repeated and perpetual ousting of Hezbollah also in Lebanon. So as you can see, Israelis have multiple enemies in the region, and they were not ready for any sort of resistance the same way that the same resistance that they encountered in Gaza. They were not fully focused and prepared for the Iranian support for the Palestinian resistance in Gaza, and therefore they were not ready to encounter that, let alone they're not ready for any sort of land invasion, and they're not ready for any sort of protests on multiple fields. Mm-hmm. And this is why this is a huge surprise to the Israelis.
Well, the record of struggles against colonialism since 1945 and up to 1948, when the occupation arrived, support reaching the conclusion that the side that wins a legitimacy war will eventually control the political outcome anywhere, let alone in Palestine itself, despite being weaker militarily and diplomatically. This is going to the Palestinian side here. Is it safe to say that Israel has lost legitimacy war, and we are actually witnessing the last stand of settler colonialism inside of Palestine?
As long as you have factions and as long as you have civilians actively resisting occupation, it has been bound to its demise since the beginning. The Palestinian collective memory, cultural memory of itself, is reproduced throughout generations, and this is something that they found really shocking in the recent protests. the unity that not only did they find the unity inside Palestinian land, but they found it internationally more than ever, and this was very unprecedented. Even people who did not have much of a clue of what is going on in Palestine are now asking the real questions. Every image, every video, and every quote and article, it reached all four corners of the earth. And what constitutes legitimacy is public opinion. And so public opinion is swayed personally, on a personal level. When I found people who once supported right-wing fascist organizations, all of a sudden they are calling Israel an apartheid state, that's when I knew that the legitimacy war is in our favor.
Well, that's for us to hope. For the Palestinians to make this movement more powerful, to liberate their land, hopefully. Thank you very much, Mona Issa, spokesperson of the Boycott U.S. Products campaign and a political commentator, for joining us to talk about this matter, the matter of tensions increasing inside of the occupied territories inside of Palestine. Thank you for being with us. Now, please stay tuned. Next, we will be talking with Manuel Oxenreiter about how the Israelis failed in all the strategy they put forward against Palestine. Stay with us.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
No one in the Israeli entity expected what came along at the hands of the Palestinian resistance in Gaza. All talk about estimates and expectations lost its credibility with the first rocket launching towards occupied Al-Quds shortly after the threat of the leader of the Qassam Brigades, Abu Khalid al-Daif. Israel indeed faced a torrential of surprises, not only related to the ability of the resistance to launch large missiles that touched down deep within the entity, rather how the Palestinians of the occupied interior worked in harmony with Gaza. Israel loses military upper hand in this following report.
No one in apartheid Israel expected what the Palestinians were able to achieve in the past 2 weeks. This disbelief alone represents the level of crisis in Israel, the crisis of the Zionist political, military, and intelligence mind, the crisis of uncertainty about what might emanate from the other side. It is the same crisis that existed with Lebanon for many years, and it worsened with Gaza a few years ago, before its sheer size became crystal clear with the outbreak of the recent military confrontation. The first surprise was for the resistance to initiate war. And from where? From the blockaded Gaza Strip, besieged from every corner. Then was the unprecedented military security and political pressure against Israel from the majority of the regional and international states, who are all facing multiple hardships due to the exacerbation of the global economic crisis and the spread of the corona pandemic. The Israeli occupation did not expect that the Gaza Strip would initiate such a step. If the Zionist regime had the lowest security or political regard, it would have acted in a different way in managing the case of ethnic cleansing in the Arab neighborhoods of East Al-Quds. However, the Gaza Strip initiated a qualitative step that made the enemy lose what had always distinguished it, which is the element of surprise resulting from its superiority in initiating wars. It is enough for the Israeli occupation to monitor the performance of the resistance in Gaza to start all new different calculations that involves other fronts of resistance, especially the Lebanon front, which has learned enough from Gaza's last lesson to reconsider many matters regarding confrontation with the enemy, not related to conventional deterrence, but rather to the combat doctrine, based on the principle of defensive attack and preventive attack. Confronted with what Gaza had achieved, Israel was facing a flood of surprises, not only related to the ability of the resistance to launch large missiles that reached deep within the entity. Rather, the Palestinians' response to the rocket fire went beyond ceremonial solidarity, as they usually do, to the limits of direct engagement in a confrontation that broke all the monotony that had occurred over a decade in the occupied West Bank and the 1948 territories. Israel did not expect that a new generation of Palestinians would emerge in popular movements interspersed with ferocious protests against the occupation forces. Within a few days, Israel was facing a different kind of crisis: the inability to control the Palestinian scene in the West Bank, where the Palestinian Authority cannot exercise exceptional repression, and it knows that its problem as an authority cooperating with the occupation has become greater than ever before.
To discuss this issue with us from Berlin is Manuel Oxen, writer, who is editor-in-chief of the Zurist magazine. Thank you very much for being with us, Manuel. Now, with the announcement of a ceasefire without a complete agreement between the Gaza Strip and apartheid Israel, renewed escalation might not be far from happening, and we did see a bit of escalation in Al-Aqsa, in the occupied Al-Quds today. Can Israel handle another round of Gaza rockets on the occupied cities with harmonious clashes inside of the occupied territories, whether in the West Bank or the 48 territories?
Well, as you correctly say, we speak about a ceasefire, a truce, and we don't speak about peace. And of course, we are not speaking about any kind of agreement for the future. How does it come to a truce, to a ceasefire in the conflict? It comes to this because both of the parties, they need a break. And I think that is what we witness now in this, in the latest conflict. But what should we see? We see that Israel has suffered a tremendous loss. And with this loss, I mean, this is the magic spell of a so-called wonder weapon, which was called the Iron Dome. For a long time, the Iron Dome was really promoted like a super wonder protective weapon, and the Palestinians indeed managed to simply to put the Iron Dome at its limit. So I think that is important. Then we have to see that we have two totally different war economies when it comes to Israel and the Israeli forces and to the Palestinians. We have with Israel a super progressive and highly technological army, a very expensive army, by the way, which can be only active and where the maintenance can only be done with huge foreign payments. I was just checking, so for the year 2019, they were going 3.8 billion only US American taxpayers' money, mainly in military help for Israel. So on the other side, we have the Palestinians, which are fighting mainly also with manpower. What they have for the Palestinians, they are used to losses also. For the Israelis, every loss is a big, not just a human loss, it is also a symbolic loss. So we see right now that there is a break, but it's for sure not the end of the war. We witness now a truce, a break. Maybe there will be some talks, but seeing the last decades of this conflict, I have my doubts.
Well, faced with a glorious scene of resistance, if I may, inside of Palestine, Israel is struck again with a recurrent question of what can be done. All talk about the Israelis' attempts to achieve military victories in the Gaza Strip. We're talking about 350 kilometers open-air prison in Palestine, in southern Palestine. And they express a lack of understanding of the reality. Still, with that small place, the existing reality of equations inside of Palestine, inside of Gaza, and around it. What options does apartheid Israel really have right now to try and deal with a new movement, with a new liberation movement inside its own territories?
That is one of the main problems for Israel. The time is running. The time is running. Also, in terms of demography for Israel. So they cannot compensate. They simply cannot compensate the growing Arab population in their own territory, and of course also the growing ultra-Orthodox Jewish population, which refuses to take arms and refuses to serve in the army. So Israel is at the point where they can do, pragmatically seen two choices. You can do the choice of de-escalation and go into agreements and go into serious talks. This is the one way. And there is the other way, to go into a total escalation. Unfortunately, for now, it looks like they chose the way of the total escalation. But as you said in your question, when Israel is, what are these victories? When they are celebrating victories, I think that was the term. These are no real victories, because in 2, 3, 4, maybe in 5 years, the situation is again the same. The problem is simply for Israel that they have an opponent. If they cut one, to say it like this, two others are coming. They have this problem, and this problem can only be solved with a real peaceful solution on the one side, or with going berserk on the other side, which really going into genocidal brutality. For now, it looks like there are both forces even present in Israel, but for now it looks also like that the second, the violent part, that they are playing.
And this is exactly what I want to point out to right here, especially in the occupied 1948 territories. Israel attempted to create some sort of a balance of terror by allowing and even protecting illegal colonial settlers to go and create all sorts of havoc and violence, and even in some sort of a gang logic against the native Palestinians, in parallel with widespread arrests inside these occupied territories, especially of Palestinian activists and mostly the participants in the pro-Palestinian protests that happened during the past 3 or 4 weeks. This is where the new wave of the Palestinian liberation is hitting the hardest. But how much of a risky game is Israel playing here?
As I said, the time is running, and we shouldn't underestimate. I mean, it is for if I would have an advice to the Palestinian side, it would be never underestimate the opponent. And Israel has still two very important strategic advantages when it comes to this conflict. And the first strategic advantage is the absolutely extremely professional lobbying Israel is doing, especially in Europe and, of course, in North America. As I said in the answer of the first question, Israel couldn't act as it acts if there wouldn't be the foreign support. Israel is not generating the means, the money, whatever they need to defend their society and, of course, also to keep the high living standard of their society. They are not generating it by themselves. They need a constant influx of foreign help. For this, they are absolute masters of foreign lobbying. This is number one. And here is the time also running. Just in one sentence, we have a destabilization right now in North America, at latest since we had the Trump government. And we have a destabilization, don't forget this too, also in Europe. The hit the COVID measures were giving to Europe, this is all affecting also the economic capacities of Europe. So we see that the partners of Israel are getting weaker. The second thing, what we shouldn't forget, and I think that is also an important point in this context, is that Israel has a very, very sophisticated way of regional intelligence. I'm not speaking of the global intelligence, what of course is also good, but they have also a regional intelligence, and they are successful in dividing and fragmenting the opponent's camp. I think I'm not telling in this any news, but as long as Israel manages also to divide, to fragment, and to bring Palestinian groups against other Palestinian groups, mm-hmm. that is the way, I think, for Israel right now. These are the last real advantages they have, and they are, of course, also dangerous for the Palestinian camp.
Well, Israel has really nothing left to do except escalate the way you are saying, and make the Palestinians who chose to revolt pay the price. This is what they keep saying. They keep saying that they need to make them pay the price. But I'm sensing some sort of a possible role for the Palestinian Authority in the occupied Palestinian territories led by Mahmoud Abbas. Might he be the actual bullet that might be maybe targeting the Palestinians in the occupied territories?
The question should be Is the Israeli society ready to pay the price? We just spoke about the high living standard in the Israeli territories, mm-hmm. and the very, very, I mean, it's basically like living standards in a Western country. I think the Palestinian villages and the Palestinian settlements, they are pretty much used to suffer. I think every Palestinian family already suffered the loss at least of a house or of a relative due to this war. But the Israeli society changed. It is not anymore the society of the 1950s and 60s, where a lot of people went from Europe who experienced World War II and who survived World War II. We have now a liberal, of course only liberal in regards of inner Israeli society, mm-hmm. but of a liberal society where a lot of people, they don't want to suffer, they don't want to pay a price. I think that is also a very important point where the time is running and what mm-hmm. Israeli authorities know exactly.
Well, it seems that we have to wait and see in the upcoming weeks what this new wave of Palestinian revolution, if I may, might bring to the illegal settlers inside of the occupied Palestinian territories. Thank you very much, Manuel Oxen, writer, the editor-in-chief of the Zurist magazine, for talking to us from Berlin about this matter. Thank you for being with us. And thank you. Please stay tuned next week for more from the Mideast Stream.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality. Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Roundtable from Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much for joining me and my wonderful guests on today's episode of Back to Reality. In the studio with me, I have the honor and pleasure of having my brothers in faith and humanity join us on today's interesting discussion. To my left, I have the one and only. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. Sister Zainab, again, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure
thank
to be with you.
Thank you for joining us, bro.
My name is Brother Yasser. I am from South Africa.
MashaAllah.
I have been here too long. We hope to benefit.
What are you doing here? Why have you been here for so long?
I've been studying in the Islamic seminary for the last 11 years. I'm just finishing my master's.
May Allah increase your tawfiq and prolong MashaAllah. Your life. And to my right, I have my special brother and guest. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being with us.
This is Ayman Rizvi, and I am actually in the Hawza as well for mm-hmm. about 7 to 8 years.
MashaAllah.
Finishing up my second master's program here.
We live in the age of technology, right, per se, and information and data and knowledge, sort of. Well, actually, that's debatable. Information is different from knowledge. And all of that is very much different from wisdom. That's why it's the 21st century and we still have flat earthers. I don't even know what that's about. Anyway, but we can't help but think whether it's the audience that create the news, you know, and their expectations and their eagerness and their vibe that creates the news, or is it the media that creates the trends and the news and, you know, pop culture and what people should be interested in? Which one do you guys think really has their hands on the steering wheel on this matter?
It is definitely, in my opinion,
the audience.
The media.
What?
I'll tell you why. If you watch just cartoons.
Yes.
Just cartoons.
Yes.
Right? I'm Sarah also has kids, you would probably know, like Disney cartoons, right? Not the old ones, even the new ones.
Yeah, especially.
There was one, right, now that was recently done that talked about the human soul.
Yes.
It's called Soul.
Literally
it's
called Soul. Yeah.
So it was like...
And the lead character reminds me of you so much.
So my son was asking me, we watched it, and my son was asking me, and then even some certain Islamic scholars... people who are Islamically inclined and this is a good thing, you know, they're showing. And I said, no, there are very intricate faults with this movie.
I swear to God.
And I was now for me, because we speak about the soul and the ruh, it trying to bring that down to my son was difficult. How to explain?
How old is he?
He's 12. So how to explain that concept of the soul and how this movie portrayed it in such a wrong way?
So wrong.
Right. Okay, fine, you have, but so their media now is showing you what? It's showing and showing you why. One issue here. One basic issue with this movie is showing you that between a human soul and an animal soul, there is no difference.
No difference. Ya Allah.
But you need someone to understand that concept in the movie to pick it up.
To pick it up, yeah.
Not everyone will pick it up, but you will see it. Like I told that to a friend of mine when we studied this. He said, because I studied you, so I said, whatever. So a kid watching that who doesn't have somebody who studied Islam or doesn't have that parent who has this knowledge behind him, the media is showing this is what the soul is. There's no difference between you and another animal.
Exactly. Khalas. And from it's going to be encrypted in their
exactly.
mind.
Exactly. And from then, you have all the other philosophical theories that they bring up with. Mm. That you are just a machine.
Just
you can be this. You can be that.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. So not only that, if you look at fashion magazines, what are fashion magazines doing? They're creating an image of what a perfect woman is.
Yep.
So, not the audience. They want the audience to follow what they are portraying. This is the shoes you wear. This is the purse you have to buy. This is the, you know, the hat you have to wear. And so on and so forth.
But to gain what objective?
Just to be fashionable.
And of course, materialism, capitalism, consumerism.
Yeah. You are now judged by what you have.
Exactly. And you don't have. Exactly. So, bro, which one do you think steers it?
You know,
audience or media?
The question, I think, should be that, you know, in two perspectives, like what should be and what is currently.
Right.
Because, you know, currently media is creating news for not to cater people, not to cater the needs of the people. Media is basically is a tool right now in the hands of imperialism or, you know, the superpowers to create consumerism, as Brother Yasir has said, or some other goals, some other...
Objectives.
Yeah, some other objectives which are basically evil in their nature.
Mm.
So, but what should be done? It should be basically the to cater the needs of the audience. Like when I remember that I was watching a clip of a speech of Imam Khomeini, Rahmatullah Alayhi, when he came back to Iran on the same day, or I think the next day, he was giving a speech in front of a huge crowd in which he mentioned that I don't have the problem with cinema. I don't have problem with the radio. I don't have problem with the television or films. I have the problem with what you show them through these mediums, right? So again, this is the.
So I don't mind the means. I mind the content.
Of course.
Okay.
The content is really important, and I really don't show cartoons anymore to my kids.
Seriously?
Yes, I don't.
You for real?
Yes, for real.
Any cartoons? Like DreamWorks, Disney, Pixar?
Not, I think, very old cartoons like Tom and Jerry or something like that. But, you know, recently I have seen all of these videos very carefully. And again, Brother Yasir is right that they are, intrinsically putting things in these animations.
I understand that, but bro, hear me out. As the byproduct of Disney Channel personified, I must say.
Sure.
I'm not here to defend Disney Channel, but I'm saying that, God, no, I'm not here to defend Disney Channel at all. But it did help a lot with character building in the sense of, well, I was exposed to all of that, and then I grew up and I was like, all right, I ain't gonna want to do that. I ain't gonna want to do that. I ain't wanna be this. I ain't gonna follow that Disney princess's footsteps because she lost her shoe at midnight and that just doesn't make sense. Right? I was equipped with the choice to decide which courses. But if you deprive your children of all that's going on in the world...
No, it's not deprivation. It's basically a selection. You know, I select things which I think are good for them. Because if you really think about it, you know, for example...
But what else? But, okay, if you select this for them, what is the alternative that they're exposed with?
Exactly. The alternative is basically either some Iranian cartoons, which are, you know, okay. Because you cannot show them everything. Everything on the media, you cannot show your kids.
No, you can't.
So you have to be, you need to be picky. You need to pick and choose what you can show your kids. The same way I defended homeschooling, I would defend this as well. Imam Khomeini, all of our Maraji Kiram, you take a look at these personalities.